Okay, so we will call this meeting of the Municipal Services Committee to order. I think I have the wrong agenda. Let's see, hold on, I'm sorry. I thought I had the right one.
Do you see that? Grace, the screen should be up now.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do.
Sorry about that.
No worries. Okay. I think I had last month's agenda, which is somewhat similar. Okay, so Peter's on vacation, so you all get me today, a substitute of some kind. To start, I think we have some new faces here, so maybe we can quick introductions, so we all know who is who. Matt, would you like to introduce the CROG staff?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining today's meeting. I'm Matt Hart here from CROG. I'm the executive director, and I'm joined by Pauline Yoder, our chief operating officer, Kim Bona, program manager who staffs this committee, Elizabeth Sanderson, our bipartisan infrastructure law coordinator. I believe that's it from the CROG team. Did I miss anybody from CROG? Oh, Maureen Goulet. I'm sorry, Maureen Goulet. She's a principal program manager here at CROG as well.
Thank you, Matt. And my name is Grace Tiezzi. I'm the assistant town manager from Avon. And I'll just go around in the order I see you on my screen. Tom from Ellington.
Yep. How you doing, everybody? Tom Modzelewski, acting director of public works for the town of Ellington.
Lori?
Lori Spielman, first selectman for the town of Ellington.
Megan?
I'm Megan Massa, projects and grants manager for the town of Tolland.
Tom from Simsbury.
Tom Fitzgerald, acting deputy town manager in Simsbury.
David from Circa.
Hi, everyone. David Murphy from Circa.
Kasia?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Kasia Perciello, assistant town manager in Manchester.
Kimberly?
Hi, I'm Kimberly Lord. I'm the finance director in Manchester.
Fred?
Fred Presley, town manager in Wethersfield.
David?
Hello, everyone. I'm David Norris, assistant town engineer in Southington.
And Jonathan?
Hi, everyone. Jonathan Louise, town manager in Glastonbury.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Happy to have you all here. I think I got everybody. So the next item on the agenda is the approval of the May 16th minutes. Does anyone have any edits, changes to the minutes? No? Okay, hearing none, I'll take a motion to adopt the May 16th meeting minutes.
So moved, Lori Spielman.
Thanks, Lori. A second?
I'll second Fred Presley.
Thank you, Fred. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? No? Okay, hearing none. We'll move on. Reports from the chair. I have no report. And staff, I'll turn it over to Matt.
Thank you so much, Grace. I have just a small number of items, then I would ask Pauline to provide us an update on the Regional Performance Incentive Program and anything else she has. So last week was a very busy week at CROG. On Monday the 12th, I thought we had a very productive work session with policy board members to discuss our strategic visioning initiative. And thank you to the MSC members who were able to attend and participate. And really we spend most of our time talking about what we see as CROG's strategic priorities for the next 3 to 5 years. And we talked about things such as our work to improve safety on our roads and Vision Zero. We talked about the potential preparation of a regional housing strategy. We talked about our work to continue to build out our network of multi-use trails. what more we can do in the area of economic vitality and how to best leverage those federal infrastructure dollars, and a variety of related topics. So it was, again, a very productive discussion. We'll be doing some more work at a staff level, and then I will coordinate with Peter to bring our work back to this committee probably late summer, early fall, where we'll have more of a draft. We're calling it a strategic playbook, where we'll have more of a draft for the committee to react to. But again, really appreciate those of you who were able to attend last Monday. And then secondly, on Thursday, we held our annual meeting at the Riverfront Recapture Boathouse in Hartford. And I know that many of you were able to attend, and thank you so much for that. I thought we had a good meeting as well. We were able to recognize a couple of longtime CROG members, and as well as some of our employees. You know, for our membership, we were able to recognize John L. Sesser, who's been a very involved member of this committee for many, many years, as well as Richard Johnson, Jonathan's predecessor in Glastonbury. And the venue was lovely. You know, we had a great day. And it was all in all, I think, a very positive annual meeting. So thank you for those of you who were able to attend and participate. I want to thank our keynote speaker, Michelle McCabe from Connecticut Main Street Center. Next item I wanted to bring to your attention, we've got very good news to share. Yeah, under the state budget, COGS across the state, one of the most, I guess the most significant funding source we receive from state government right now is called the Regional Services Grant, or RSG. So under the new state budget, the General Assembly has increased the allocation to COGS across the state from roughly 4.2 to approximately $7 million. So CROG's grant will be increasing from approximately $800,000 to roughly $1.3 million per year. So a little over additional $500,000 to CROG, which we're really excited about. We're going to utilize that to add some key positions so that we can better serve our communities. Pauline and I are already, you know, we're reviewing our thoughts. We did anticipate this potential under our adopted budget for next fiscal year. And we will certainly be coming back to this committee, you know, once we firm up our plans to get your reaction. So really excited about that. And again, we're looking at approximately an additional $500,000 per year, assuming that state grant holds in the future. So those are the items I wanted to touch on today. And I would ask Pauline to talk about where we are with the RPIP program. We are struggling a little bit, and we think we might have to reset and try a couple of different things. Pauline?
So once again, we're still looking for willing partners on the assessment side. That's been, I think, our most challenging area of just finding two or three towns who will work together, and we might have to rethink how we approach that, or we're thinking about how we approach that differently. We are the, as you may or may not know, the per diem building official. A couple of things on the building official side. We were, the CBOA, the Connecticut Building Officials Association, has invited us to speak at their September meeting. So we will be doing that. We're also, our per diem building official position did not yield any qualified candidates. So we are looking at most likely going out to a full-time position instead. And because that has a high level of interest, but on the town side, hard to find people. I think that is the challenge there, and maybe switching it to a full-time position will enable us to find someone there. On the ACO side, that's the area that I think we have the most traction. We have a couple of sub-regions that we'll likely be moving forward with Columbia, Hebron, and Andover being one, and then the other being hopefully Weathersfield, Newington, and possibly Berlin. We're still in discussion with them. And the other update that I have beyond regional, the RPIF grants, is that June 27th is the Human Services Coordinating Council meeting. You will be getting invites if you have not already. You probably got to save the date, but you will be getting invites to that. Please forward that to your human services director or social services director of that might be of interest. And I think those are the only things that I have.
So Pauline, just to add, if I could add on to that briefly, if I could, Grace. Mm-hmm. So on the RPIP program, for those of you who are new, that stands for Regional Performance Incentive Program. And under that initiative, the state provides 3 years of seed monies to help a COG establish a new regional program or initiative. And as Pauline talked about, we received three grants, building inspection, assessment, and for animal control. And as Pauline explained, for the building code official, you know, we've been unsuccessful to date in advertising for part-time employees. So we are most likely going to be advertising for a full-time position with benefits. But you know, before we do that, we want to make sure that there are towns that are still interested in participating. You know, we have heard, I think the town of Bloomfield is a likely candidate, but anyone else, even if you haven't been involved in the conversations to date, would encourage you to reach out to Pauline. And Pauline, if you could put your, people probably all know how to reach you, but if you wouldn't mind putting your email in the chat, that'd be great. And I think that completes our reports at a staff level, Grace.
Thank you, Matt. Does anybody have any questions for CROG staff? No? Okay, great. So we'll move into our business items. We have a presentation from David Murphy of CIRCA, which is the Connecticut Institute for Resilience and Climate Adaptation, about something called Resilient CT 2.0. So David, I will turn it over to you.
Okay, thanks everyone. I'm relatively confident that most of you have seen these slides either in one of the policy board meetings or one of the subcommittee meetings, or both. So I think what I'll do, here's my approach. I'm going to sort of just get through them and then let's just have an open discussion because we've been meeting with the towns. It's going very well, and I'd rather kind of talk about that and then leave you with the next steps. So the agency that I work for, CIRCA, the Connecticut Institute for Resilience and Climate Adaptation, which is part of UConn, has been retained by CROG to update the hazard mitigation plan. And we're also deploying a program called Resilient Connecticut 2.0 at the same time. Why at the same time? Well, there's a couple of reasons. The biggest reason is so instead of having 76 meetings, we can have 38 meetings, right? Meet with each town once and cover the same material. But the two processes are also very similar, so they can leverage one another. This is the planning team at CIRCA that is involved with both. Mary Buchanan and Nicole Gavert, who you've met already in some of the meetings, and myself. This is material that you've been seeing for 20 years if you've been involved with any sort of hazard mitigation planning. The same act that's in place, the Disaster Mitigation Act, is why we have hazard mitigation plans. It's a loss reduction act. Having the plan makes every one of the 38 towns eligible for the FEMA grant programs. And some of the CROG towns have had some success with the FEMA grants. So it certainly is a plan that we want to keep current. We are using this time to update the hazard mitigation plan and also make it into a climate adaptation plan. What's really nice about that is it's actually pretty easy. We like to say it's hard, but it's pretty easy because hazard mitigation and climate adaptation are kind of the same thing. They are loss reduction tools. But climate adaptation looks further ahead and kind of considers future conditions more than a simple hazard mitigation would. So why are we expanding the hazard mitigation plan and making it into a climate adaptation plan? There's a couple of reasons. This is the fourth time CROG will have a plan. It's kind of time for a refresh, make it more exciting. We have a lot of input from state agencies and the governor's office for climate change about what they'd like to see in planning documents, hazard mitigation plans, and new climate adaptation plans. For example, extreme heat and cooling centers is a really big initiative right now. So we've got instructions from that office on ways to kind of incorporate that. There are new funding sources, and CROG just received, I believe you know, that you received a grant for the stormwater utility feasibility study. So we're starting to see new grant programs that are asking what's in the hazard mitigation plan. So we want to just make sure we capture all this. If we miss the opportunity, it's going to be another 5 years until you have a chance to kind of incorporate a lot of what's going on. And one of the things that we want to capture is what we're calling Resilient Connecticut. So this is, which I'll go over in a second. These are the hazards that are in your plan, and we are going to be incorporating the same hazards and adding extreme heat for the first time. You already have the other hazards. So the Resilient Connecticut 1.0 was funded by the feds. It was money from Hurricane Sandy. So as you may imagine, it was focused in Fairfield County and New Haven County. 1.0 was mostly finished. Out of 1.0, we had identified 64 areas of unmet climate needs in those two counties. And of the 64 of them, 7 of them have advanced to concept design and will be advancing to FEMA funding applications. We have state funds to expand the program statewide, which is why Capital Region is involved now. I'm going to quickly show you one of the examples from the pilot area, Fairfield County, New Haven County. This is an image of downtown Danbury, and you can see on the left-hand side our flood vulnerability mapping, and on the right-hand side our heat vulnerability mapping. The darker colors show the more vulnerable parts of the neighborhoods. We have expanded this tool to the entire state. Some of you have seen the images from your own town. We've been using them in the meetings that we've been going through. What we did as part of the and overlaid them with things that HUD and other federal agencies would care about as a result of Superstorm Sandy. So future development areas, transit-oriented development, critical infrastructure, critical facilities, even regional assets. So where they all piled on top of each other, we identified these unmet climate needs. And you can see this isn't the image that we prepared for Danbury. You can see on the left-hand side the flood, heat, and social vulnerability scores, and some of the words that describe why this area has risks. And out of that became this project that we call Resilient Danbury. And you can see some graphics here from how the project is going. It's going very well. We have a flood model that was developed by our consultant, which shows current and future flood events in the downtown area for a 1% or 100-year rainfall event. And it shouldn't surprise you to see that the area is larger on the right-hand side compared to the left. So a future flood will be having a greater impact downtown. And on the right-hand side, you can see some of the run-up to the heat analysis we're doing. We're looking for a new cooling center for downtown Danbury. The result of this is going to be an application that we put together this fall that goes to FEMA for flood mitigation and a new cooling center. So we're addressing flooding and extreme heat, which are the two biggest concerns coming from the state. They're telling CERCO, this is what we want to address. So we have funding to do this now in other parts of the state. I'm not exaggerating when I say Danbury is elated to have this much work done. They have been struggling for 20 years to get a flood study completed in the downtown area, and now it's done. And they know they can use this to get federal funds to do projects. So we're looking statewide. We're also incorporating impacts of the flooding from 2021, which really impacted the Capital Region. You've all heard about the flooding in the north end of Hartford, for example. Some of the questions we're asking the towns when we meet with them, what happened during those events in 2021, describe the damage, and tell us what you want to do about it. This is a view of the heat vulnerability mapping for the Capital Region. And it's the same same thing that we just looked at for Danbury, but zoomed out to the whole, all 38 towns in CROG, you can see that for the most part, the more heat vulnerable areas are the more developed areas. In some cases, other kinds of land uses are being captured. You see a circle for nurseries and ag where Granby meets East Granby, and then you can see a circle over the Tilcon Quarry in Plainville. So outdoor workers are also captured in this equation in that sensitivity and exposure factors. So we're looking at this with each town as we meet with them, and you know, we've been getting some good feedback on the mapping. We've been asking every one of the towns the same questions. Where do you see intersections of flood-related challenges and important assets or infrastructure? How about extreme heat-related challenges? And if we have crickets chirping, no one has any ideas, we have these prompts. So where do you see or feel like you can see in the future populations at risk for flooding or extreme heat? Where do you have clusters of critical facilities with risks? Are you lacking cooling centers or respite from extreme heat? Do you have redevelopment pressures? Do you have transit-oriented development? And for the towns along the busway or CT rail, that may be a factor. Do you have unresolved or emerging flood concerns? Rural stream crossings is coming up. That's what we talked about in Willington, and that's completely appropriate. If that's the biggest climate challenge, we need to write it down and document that. And also water and sewer infrastructure at risk. This is just a summary of where we are. I've already told you we're kind of in the later phases of 1.0 for Southwestern Connecticut. We're also doing this in the River Cog and Southeastern Cog regions. We're about to go to bid for consultants to undertake the studies in those two cogs. The planning phase is done, and we are working with you right now on the planning phase. I think this is my second to last slide. I have just one more slide to convince you that the Hazard Mitigation Plan and Resilient Connecticut are really very similar. We've already talked about this, but they both involve engaging, assessing risks, identifying opportunities, and then developing projects for FEMA funds. This was the schedule. I think some of you have seen this one already. We're mostly on schedule. We do need to play some catch up with the municipal meetings. We thought we'd get them done in June, and we aren't quite there yet, although many are occurring next week. So we appreciate the good work in getting those scheduled with us. I didn't want to have this be too much like a hammer, but these are the towns that we're waiting to still schedule meetings with. I think a couple of you may be present right now. You're representing these towns. Avon, we've got an email out to Hiram Peck. I think we were reaching out to the wrong person, but we'll give a shout out to him instead. Some of these towns we've had some email correspondence with. A few of them have been super quiet. So we'll have to go back and try to get these last 10 meetings scheduled in the first couple weeks of July, which is a tough time, but virtual meetings can make things easier in some cases. We are meeting with towns in person as well. And I will say for the towns that we're meeting with in person, I've really enjoyed it. I think that you get a lot out of in-person meetings. I still will always be a fan. And I know that ages me a little bit, but we've had some good discussions in person. So what's next? Please do feel that you may attend the meeting with your local coordinator. Even though it might not be you, you can attend the meeting and provide input. And we're asking folks to address the status of their actions from the previous plan, describe development trends, describe the greatest climate challenges, and then think about those complex challenges and how we may be able to work with some of you to move forward into individual projects. On that note, we do have two of the DCRF grant awards from DEEP that you may have seen, one in West Hartford, one in New Britain. DEEP actually said in its award narrative, coordinate with CIRCA, and that may be a way to sort of leverage the two programs. So we know we'll be working with New Britain and West Hartford, and so we hope to be working with more of you. If you see yourself in those Danbury graphics, great, let me know. If you're a rural town and you don't see yourself in those graphics, that's okay. We'll find a project for you too. So I think that's all I have. Any questions? quiet.
Dave, this is Matt. I can start the conversation going. So could you elaborate a little bit more about how this work could lead to future infrastructure funding grants?
Sure, I can do that. So CIRCA has state funds, and then when that runs out, we have FEMA funds that are specifically for scoping projects. So we could work with the town, for example, let's say West Hartford didn't get the grant from DEEP. We know that they have a concern about Cane Brook and Kennedy Brook, which flood near I-84 and continue flooding into the Hartford across the city line. So absent any funds locally to address that, we can write a scope of services for a flood study that also addresses extreme heat. And UConn, because that's what CIRCA is part of, can directly hire the consultant to conduct a flood study and extreme heat mitigation study for that area. That would occur sometime in 2024. And the town would need to do really two things. Have someone represent locally the project. So West Hartford would be Dwayne, Hartford would probably be Mike Looney or Frank, someone from Public Works. They would stay involved, they would attend meetings. We would conduct some public engagement in both communities, which also would require the towns to kind of show up. But then CIRCA would work with a consultant to undertake the entire study. At the end of that, there would be a FEMA benefit cost analysis, an application put together for FEMA funding from one of the grant programs that the Hazard Mitigation Plan makes you eligible for. That's the goal. It's really to move things along this so-called resilience project pipeline, just get things moving. There are other ways to do this. If CIRCA didn't exist, towns could apply for the Deep Resilience Funds, or you could apply for FEMA scoping grants, or you could apply for STEEP grants. There are other ways to fill this gap, but our program is just one of those tools.
Thanks very much, Dave. And it's not just for larger towns like Hartford and West Hartford, right? Today, we've got many of our smaller communities that are participating, which is great. I mean, it's very relevant to them as well.
Yeah, I think one of the projects we're about to start in this next phase from the Southeastern Cog region is in Jewett City, which is a pretty small place. They have a pretty severe flooding problem that affects a lot of housing. It's what we kind of talk about as naturally occurring affordable housing. And so we don't want it to flood. People live there. And so I think we're going to be working with them in the near future on a flood study. And I think that's, you know, not a bad example of a smaller community. It's a community that doesn't typically apply for grants on its own. They don't really have the capacity to handle large grants. And so it's a win-win for them because they don't need to accept the funding, then go out to bid. They can just tell us, we're good, we're ready, and then we take care of that.
So David, maybe I'm misunderstanding. So if, say, Avon, we're at the top of your naughty list, we will be in touch, by the way.
Only because it's alphabetical. That's why you're at the top.
But so say Avon had a project, would CIRCA simply do the planning and then it's up to us to like implement it, or is it, you know, you take care of it all soup to nuts?
Right. So if by implementation you mean construction, we would not be involved in that. Eventually, okay. There'd be some expectation that the town would take that on.
I got you.
But okay. It's filling that gap that comes in between the Hazard Mitigation Plan, which is really just a screening tool, right? The Hazard Mitigation Plan is so broad and so general. Mm-hmm. The gap between that and the actual construction funds is this whole study phase and the benefit cost analysis that has never really been funded. So that's where we come in.
Okay, understood.
I think Fred has his hand raised, Grace.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Fred.
That's okay, thanks, Grace. Dave, I did similar project to this when I was town manager in Rhode Island. And one of the things we quickly realized was that, you know, you referred to the 100-year storm, that, you know, the intensity and frequency of these storm events has changed drastically over the last several decades. And we actually brought in NOAA River Forecasting Center and they were able to come in and look at our communities and say, you know, well, what you're using as a 100-year storm is really like the 25-year storm. But they were explaining that they had pressures from the federal government not to change those numbers. There was a lobby by the builders to not get them to change those numbers, but they're not very realistic if we're using that as the guideposts for designs and for mitigations. So what, if anything, are we doing to really look at what's real now? Are you guys looking at those numbers? Are they being adjusted to reflect what we're actually seeing?
They are, correct. So for example, that image that I showed you of Danbury, the left-hand side was that was based on the precipitation data in the current NOAA Atlas 14 manual, which is something you could look up, how many inches of rain fall in a 100-year storm. And then the image on the right-hand side, it was in the middle of the graphic with more blue, more flooding, was using a future condition with more intense precipitation. And those numbers were taken out of the Connecticut Physical Climate Science Assessment Report, which is the worst title of any document. We can never get those words out. We're looking at future conditions and using those in the designs. And for the coastal towns that we're working in, we're looking at the sea level rise, which of course is not an issue for the Danbury graphic, but
it would be for Connecticut River, you know, the Crog region, which would have tidal influence if there's a major shift in the sea level.
Exactly, right. And we've had some, having just finished working in the River Crog region, that town of Cromwell was pretty interested in future river flood levels because, of course, this tidal through there all the way up to Hartford. So we're taking a look at that as well. But we are including future conditions in our studies and our designs. And yeah, it's true. When you get into the FEMA benefit cost analysis tool, it isn't always easy to incorporate the future conditions. But we're working on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions or comments for David? No? Okay. Well, thank you, David. This was very informative.
Thanks, everyone. Good to see you all.
Thanks, David. Appreciate all your work.
See you soon, Matt.
Okay. So moving along. We are at municipal information sharing. So does anybody have anything that they'd like to discuss? Any questions, anything they'd like to mention? No? Okay. So the next item on our agenda are future agenda items. So we have two items that have been listed, continuing discussion about stormwater management and continuing our discussion of local government workforce development. Matt, do you have anything you want to say about either of those topics?
I can certainly do that, Grace. And I think we'll also probably keep the RPIP program on the list, correct, Pauline? With respect to the stormwater management discussion, very relevant to Dave Murphy's presentation. And as he mentioned, in case you didn't hear, last week we did receive word that we will be receiving $250,000 under the grant application we applied to the Climate Resilience Fund, the state's Climate Resilience Fund. And the governor announced, I think it was 21 awards last week. So really want to commend Maureen Goulet, Maureen, for her excellent work in putting that application together. You know, she didn't have a lot of turnaround time to put it together. And we've been waiting on this for some months now. But we plan to utilize that funding, as you may recall, to conduct a study looking at the state of stormwater management infrastructure across our region, you know, doing something of an assessment of existing infrastructure, and then some recommendations for the future, understanding that stormwater management needs really vary across our community. You know, we've got some of our larger communities that are more densely populated in the greater Hartford vicinity that are really struggling with street flooding, as an example. Dave noted what's going on in North Hartford. You know, we also see that in West Hartford, parts of Wethersfield and elsewhere, depending on the type of storm event. And then many of our smaller communities, like the ones you all serve and represent, you know, just more routine MS4 requirements can be a challenge. So we're really excited about the potential there. And the workforce development discussion, we do have an informal ad hoc group that we formed. I want to thank Elizabeth Sanderson from our team for helping to staff that. And we're working in close partnership with CCM to look at identifying career pipelines, if you will, for a small number of municipal occupations. You know, we're starting off with building official because we're very focused on that right now. We'll look at assessors as well, maybe finance professionals, but we're trying to get, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 pipelines established that could serve as models for other municipal professions. So we'll certainly keep you apprised of our work in that area and solicit your feedback as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Matt. Does anybody have anything else that they'd like to put forward and for future discussion? No? Okay. Well, hearing none, I think that brings us to the end of our agenda. So when will our next meeting be, Kim? September 19th. There we go. So I guess we will, with that, we'll adjourn for the summer. All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much, Grace.
Yeah, thank you, guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.